from the Star Rentals Sports Desk, your 93.3 KJRFM Sports Headlines.
All righty, boys and girls, here we go. Headlines live from the Emerald Queen Casino, brought to you by our friends at Buddy's, Gertie's and Glass. It's always 420 at Buddy's, baby.
Clown.
All right, that guy. You know what, that guy. More of that guy. Coming up in a matter of minutes. Hugh Millen for Dick Fain here on a Tuesday afternoon. All right, where do we start? Mariners putting Carlos Santana in the lineup tonight. He's hitting fifth, making his 2022 debut for the M's tonight against the Orioles. The M's need a win, 34-41 after a 9-2 thumping by the Orioles last night. Robbie Ravis is Dean Kramer. Kramer, by the way, his last three starts, the Orioles are 3-0, and he's got a .54 ERA in those three games. NFL Commanders wide receiver Terry McLaurin reportedly agreeing on a three-year extension worth $23.5 million a year with a $28 million signing bonus. Tennis, Wimbledon, Serena Williams losing in the first match to Harmony Tan today in the first-round match. The 23-time Grand Slam champion is out of Wimbledon. And NBA news, Utah Jazz, after firing former Mercer Island star Quinn Snyder, apparently replacing him with Celtic assistant Will Hardy, who at 34 would be the youngest active head coach in the NBA. All right, Hugh Millen rejoins us here on the radio show. We're at the Emerald Queen. Hugh, do you know who Stan Kroenke is, by the way? Does that name ring a bell with you at all?
Yeah,
Stan Kroenke. Who's Stan Kroenke? Who is he? Say it again.
Is he the Rams owner?
He is the owner of the Rams. He also owns the Colorado Avalanche, who just won the Stanley Cup championship, by the way. He also owns the Denver Nuggets in the NBA. He also owns Arsenal FC of the British Premier League and Arsenal WFC of the Women's Soccer League. He also owns the Colorado Mammoth of the National Lacrosse League, who just won a championship, by the way. And he owns the Los Angeles Gorillas of the Call of Duty League and the Colorado Rapids of Major League Soccer. There used to be a rule with the FCC that one company could only own one radio station.
Yeah,
and they changed that, and a bunch of stations were bought up by a bunch of companies. This guy owns everything. He's got a chance to have three major championships in one single year. The dude just won two titles in the last 6 months with the Super Bowl and the Stanley Cup champion. And, oh, by the way, he's worth $10 billion.
And he's a villain in St. Louis for having taken the Rams, right? But,
yeah,
good to be Stan Kroenke, or maybe better yet, an heir to Stan Kroenke's
kidding, man. Yeah, well, if he wants to adopt me, if he wants a 48-year-old Jewish guy to be his stepson or his adopted son, I'm totally cool with that. So here's one of my biggest questions about the Seahawks football team. Right now, I think there's a little bit of reason for optimism because everything's fresh, everything's new. We're building from the ground up. But let's see what happens starting in game one against Denver. I'm concerned about two rookies starting at tackle in Charles Cross on the left side and Abe Lucas on the right side. Now, that's the way it looks like it's going to go. It may not go that way. They may sign somebody, trade for somebody. Somebody else may end up getting that start at right tackle. You put more money on Charles Cross being your starting left tackle, I think, than you would Abe Lucas being your starting right tackle. But both guys right now seem to be right on pace to start at tackle. So if you're Drew Locke, for example, put yourself in Drew Locke's shoes. You leave Denver, you have another offensive coordinator for like the eighth year in a row, you're replacing Russell Wilson, and oh, by the way, kid, Drew, we're going to have you show what you can do with two rookies starting at tackle. Go get him. And oh, by the way, you get to start against your old team in the first game of the year. So you tell me how potentially problematic that is that the Seahawks could have not one but two rookies starting a tackle this year.
Yeah, it's very concerning, but I think that at left tackle you used a top 10 pick on a guy. You just have to hit there. You have to hit.
Right.
It's like Walter Jones, Russell Okung. When you use a top 10 pick, I understand left tackle is the most important position on the line in terms of pass protection. And really, Dave, right tackle, it can be, if you've got breakdowns there as a right-handed quarterback, they always say, okay, the left tackle's got the blind side.
Yep.
The right tackle, the left tackle, if he has mistakes, he can get you killed. The right tackle, he can get you on the bench.
Right.
Because when that right tackle is always in your face, it's just really disconcerting. A lot of times on the left tackle, ignorance is bliss. You don't know that there's all this mayhem behind you. You throw the ball, you get whacked. You're probably not going to get hurt. You just go back to the huddle, and that guy was just inches from you, and you didn't know it. So you stayed in the pocket, your feet were still, and you threw the ball. The right tackle, when that guy's getting pressured back in your face, you end up moving more.
Yep.
And obviously disrupting the timing. Now, on the left tackle, I should know this. If I'm the left tackle, Dave, and you're the right end, I'm pass blocking you. What you're going to be thinking is, who's the quarterback and how athletic he is. Because if I, as left tackle, let's say I'm Charles Cross, if I take a really deep set, an overset, like really try and make sure I don't get beat by your speed rush, the area outside of me is called C gap. I'm manning that C gap. I'm really jumping outside. But what happens is the B gap between me and the guard opens up more. So I've overset, and now you say, I've got contain, but I'm going to momentarily abandon my contain, and I'm going to slip inside this guy and go in the B gap.
Yeah.
Because I overset.
Right.
And so that's one of the challenges over on that left side that you don't have on the right. If that situation played out on the right side.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's say I'm Gabe Luke,
Abe Lucas. You think about Gabe Jackson. Lucas. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was, because I want to get to him. if I'm Abe Lucas and I overset on the right and you're pass rushing against me, and then you want to say, oh, wow, that B gap looked hasty. Again, the gap that I opened up between the tackle and the guard. You want to go in the B gap. A right-handed quarterback feels that. Now he escapes the pocket. You've given up contain. I now see that you go in the B gap. I pin you inside the pocket, and the right-handed quarterback is out the gate on the right side. Now he's just extended the play. The play, instead of being 2.5, 3 seconds long, now it just went to 5 seconds. And that's a lot. That puts a big strain on your coverage. So there is a difference with right tackle, but no matter how you slice it, having a third rounder and expecting him to start, and
right.
He's not. I think Jake Curran's going to go in as the number one guy right now. I don't think we should be dismissive of these other guys, but yeah. In an ideal world for Seattle,
yep.
Abe Lucas is good enough, and he starts, and you have exactly what you just described, which is two rookies at tackle, and you're going to go through some growing pains.
Yeah, I think if you had to put money, you'd put it on Abe Lucas winning that job, but you're right. Curran's going to be the guy in camp, and then, you know, I mean, it might be a week before Abe Lucas displaces him. Somebody asked me this the other day. I want to get your thoughts on it. Are you happy the Seahawks did not trade for Deshaun Watson? Because
boy,
let me just while you're marinating on that, I can see your wheels turning there a little bit. Let me while you kind of get that going. He had his disciplinary hearing today with the NFL. It's going to continue into tomorrow. There's some thought that the NFL is going to go after him for a year and want to kick him out of the league for a year. It's a guy who did not play a snap last year, but that was a decision the Texans made, not a decision the NFL made. So it could be 2 years, Hugh, before Deshaun Watson plays football. And on top of that, obviously it'd be a different situation in Seattle, but they would have to go back to Baker Mayfield and beg him to come back and play for them next year or go after a different quarterback. And Baker's saying things like, hey, I think we've kind of moved on. I mean, they've moved on. I've moved on. So Baker Mayfield.
Well, they got Brissett.
Right, exactly. But he doesn't sound like he's going to be the good soldier if they do want to come back to him, is what I'm talking about. But, you know, I mean, I'll admit it. You know, I said on this radio show that if Deshaun Watson was free and clear, I would have no problem with the Seahawks going after him. This doesn't appear to be the free and clear category yet for Deshaun Watson at all.
Not free and clear. And, you know, it's a loaded question because there's some political undertones, obviously, with that. But I think that if he, you know, pays whatever penance. I mean, he was not charged with in any criminal sense in Texas. I think there has to be at least some level of respect given that. My response with him has been that criminal and creepy are close to one another in the dictionary. And I think that that's appropriate in this case because while it may not have been criminal what he did, at the very least, it's pretty creepy. I mean, it's hard to imagine a guy, you know, having 66 massage therapists. I mean, they're just a guy who is looking, you know, treating his body as a temple.
Right.
As a professional athlete, you know, these guys hired chefs and what have you. You're not sampling 66. That's stating the obvious because that wasn't his primary concern. So that's creepy. But if he sifts through the legal system, then he deserves to be able to play in the NFL. I don't think he should be banned for life from the NFL. So if he's going to play for somebody, yeah, could it be the Seahawks? Then you get into the question of what's your assessment of him as a quarterback and what's the cost of acquiring? I haven't had to really focus in on this question because he's been a Brown, but I think it's a fair question. I don't think it's an absolute hell yes, don't even think about it. And I don't think it's the opposite. Now, for some people, they'll say there's a certain threshold. He passed it. And once you pass that threshold, I don't want you as a Seattle Seahawk. You're just too creepy or you're too criminal or what have you.
Lots of folks agree with that. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I'm just
closing my eyes. The reason why I bring it up, I'm just closing my eyes. I'm imagining what this radio station is like if Deshaun Watson is on the Seahawks right now. And all these different accusations are coming in. Every day there's a new story. You settled this lawsuit. Tony Busby is saying this. Hey, he may have gotten a happy ending, but it's not illegal. Then we're dealing with that stuff. Now we have the disciplinary hearing that's going on today. And the rumor about the NFL wanting to suspend this guy for a year. And oh, by the way, that comes on the heels of the Seahawks not just getting this guy, but also locking him into a massive contract they are hindered now by for the next 10 years. So just imagine what it's like on Cleveland radio every single day with this dude. The fan base is fractured. Half the fan base hates the guy's guts. Half the fan base want the guy to be there to be the quarterback of the Browns. And you got more people stepping on the Browns saying, you know what, I'm never rooting for you as long as this guy is our quarterback. I mean, from a chatter perspective and a talk radio perspective and a news perspective, it's unbelievable. Every single day it's your top story. Yeah. Every day.
Well, I obviously it's polarizing, and I think that the opinion held by those, obviously there's thousands of Browns fans that are just apoplectic
right
about this acquisition. But I'm sure to answer your question, that if you put it out there on Cleveland Talk Radio and you invited callers, I think that there'd be some that would say, are you kidding me? Look, he hasn't been charged in a criminal sense. And look at the quarterback Ferris wheel that we've had for decades. And now we've got the first real blue blood bona fide potential superstar who's proven at this level. I'm sure that there's the just as apoplectic the naysayers and the detractors are, I'm sure that that's how delighted the supporters are.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, it's an amazing story. You know, there's no question about it. You use the exact right word. It's polarizing for a lot of people. There's no doubt about it. I just think the Seahawks in the end, you know, I'm thankful they didn't do it. You know, I'll be honest about that. I'll admit that. And again, maybe the Browns, you know, spoke too soon. Maybe they jumped the gun a little bit early. Maybe they should have done more homework. And I have no idea what kind of homework they've done. You know all these NFL teams, Huey, have security teams. And I'm not talking about guys. When we mention NFL security, just so people understand this, and you played in the NFL, so you can shed more light on this. When we say NFL security, we don't mean guys standing outside of a team's facility with a flashlight and a walkie-talkie. We're talking about investigators that actually work for teams that can dig into people's past and talk to people and find out, you know, what a kid does when he's off the field, what happened with the Frank Clark situation, for example, in that hotel room there in Sandusky. We're talking about security people that also investigate situations to find out if it's worth it to make an investment in a certain player. And, I mean, the Browns, if they had known all this extra was coming, there's not a chance they sign him. There's no way they sign him for that much money guaranteed if they knew all this was coming.
You're probably right. You're probably right. I don't say it without hesitation like you. I mean, some may say, look, he's only 25 years old, isn't he?
Yes.
And some would say he's worth waiting a year. I mean, the Celtics waited a year for Larry Bird. I understand they're entirely different situations. Right. But, I mean, David Robinson, you waited 2 years. There are certain players that you'd say,
totally
I'll wait a year for him, particularly for a quarterback that young.
Right.
As to your point about NFL security, you're right. They're not mall cops. These guys, every team that I was ever on, we would have a meeting. And it was basically, you know what the message was?
Huh.
Like, don't get in trouble. But if you do get in trouble, call this guy.
Right.
And generally, I feel safe saying that they were all former FBI guys, you know, retired FBI guy. I mean, they had massive experience in law enforcement and investigations, what have you. But they're, you know, they'd have PowerPoints, you know, or whatever the equivalent was back in the day of a PowerPoint. But they would have videos, and you talk about extortion and stuff that you could only fathom, you could only dream of, like, to put it in a fiction. You know, it happens. Yeah. It happens in the league. Guys get into the type of trouble you can't even imagine. And I mean, they get, you know, roofied and sexually exploitive photographs that they're then you know held what's the word? There's a word for that exploited,
but bribery.
Yeah.
People are trying to bribe them.
Blackmail them. That's the word. Right. Yeah, they're blackmailed with these photos, and so yeah, the NFL players can be targets. They can be knuckleheads, and they can perpetrate their own issues. And the NFL tries to clean that stuff up.
Well, Hugh, I got to be honest
with
you.
And not let you know about it.
Yeah, you better send me $5,000 to my Venmo account right away, or we're going to have a problem, all right? So send that over, or the whole world's going to know what's going on. Hugh Millen is in for Dick Fain. I want to do a special Ask Hugh edition of Textimonials at 49451 for 445. John Wilner is going to join us on the radio show at 5 p.m. Brian Schmetzer at 545. I want to come back and talk some college football and focus on the Dogs. It felt like a good week for UW, right? I mean, they're getting a lot of commits. They got, I think, 8 commits over the weekend, a bunch of 3-stars. A couple of 4-star guys, but for the first time really since Kalen DeBoer took over as head coach, it seems like, whether it's deserved or not, it doesn't really matter. I mean, they're getting some positive momentum on social media. The recruiting class is kind of climbing up the charts a little bit. That may change by December when other teams pass them. And the key now for this guy is to get guys he can keep on and keep committed all the way through the early signing period in December. So I want to come back and talk a little Dogs, get your thoughts, Huey, on Kalen DeBoer as well. And I heard the Dogman.com guys today were talking about the quarterback situation. And I don't know. I always thought it was kind of a no-brainer that Michael Penix would be the starter, but apparently not. We'll come back and yak about that. Hugh Millen in for Dick Fain. Coming up from the Emerald Queen Casino right here on 93.3 KJR FM.
Hear us anywhere, anytime on Alexa or Google Play at Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM and on the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Softy and Dick.
All right, Softy and Dick with that, Dick. Hugh Millen in for Dick Fain. Lots of stuff going on today. Mariners Orioles coming up game 2 of 3 tonight. Robbie Ray versus Dean Kramer. Orioles have won his last 3 starts, 3-0, in his last 3 starts, the Orioles are. He's got a .54 ERA. Robbie Ray has been phenomenal. The 24-game streak of 3 runs or less came to an end last night as George Kirby got his yitz lit up by the Oriole offense. They went back-to-back in consecutive innings last night. Terry McLaurin, wide receiver for the Commanders, getting a brand-new contract. Utah Jazz got a brand-new head coach. He's 34 years old, and Serena Williams lost today in the first round at Wimbledon. You ever been to Wimbledon, by the way, out there?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I went out there, yes, so it was, who was the guy? Andy Murray. Andy Murray won it, and it was like the first win for Great Britain in like 70, 80 years, whatever.
Oh, wow.
Gina and I were out there, and we didn't go to the tournament. We had a chance to go, and we turned it down. Like a freaking idiot. One of my biggest regrets. I was offered a credential for the All-Star game at Fenway Park in 1999. When Ted Williams came out on the golf cart, you remember that, in Boston?
Sure.
And I'm sitting there watching this thing, thinking I could be there. And instead, I'm on my couch with my thumb up my butt. So I regretted that. And then we had a chance to get tickets to go watch Wimbledon. We were out there in England just for a vacation. Had a chance to go check it out and didn't do it. But went out there the next day on Monday on the tube just to kind of see it and check it out. Sure. It was all closed because they closed it on Monday after the tournament to clean up. And it's just this big tennis complex, as you know, in just a neighborhood. There's the houses and a park right across the street. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, in that sense, it's like Augusta.
Right.
Because Augusta is just, you know, surrounded by strip centers and what have you. But, I saw John McEnroe and Martina Navratilova.
Nice.
I said that right?
Kind of. Navratilova.
So I guess I'm dating myself. But, you know, McEnroe, what's that?
No, I'm just busting your balls.
What's
Go
that,
ahead.
Dave?
Navratilova. Navratilova. Maybe that's how she says it. Who knows?
Don't know. But McEnroe was certainly a colorful character back in the 80s. And he wasn't. He wasn't a strong player in the sense of the booming serve or booming forehand, but
personality.
I don't know. I'm not a tennis expert, but it seems like the touch that he had on those volleys, those quick, like he had an ability to just hit the ball. You know, it'd skim off. The tennis people are going to text in and say, learn the language. But when the ball's just short volley, I don't know. It's like the ball right off the grass.
Yeah, yeah.
Boom, boom. You know, and it hits his racket, and he just had that beautiful touch. And so,
hey, I just brought it up.
He was worth the price of admission.
I just brought it up just like in passing, honestly, so I could tell that story about being out there. So, you know,
I thought you were trying to waste a segment.
No, there's no wasting segments. Every segment's a wasting segment on this radio show. I've been doing that for 28 years. Yeah, well, the Huskies got a bunch of commits over the weekend. You know, it started off, obviously, Anthony James, the defensive lineman that was going to go to Texas A&M and play for Jimbo Fisher. He ended up, you know, reneging on his commitment and instead is going to come play football at UW. Vincent Holmes, who I can't wait till they get him in uniform so I can say, what's up, Holmes, when they bring him to town. Athlete from San Jacinto, California, number 21 in the country. Elisha. Dick and I went over this the other day. I hate when people put names out there that are hard to pronounce in articles and don't include phonetics. It's one of my biggest pet peeves. I brought this up yesterday on the radio show. If you ever write a piece for our website or an article for the paper or whatever, and there's a name that you think to yourself, you know what, this is not a commonly used name. It might be hard for idiots like Softy to figure out how to pronounce it. Would you please do me a favor and use phonetics for God's sakes? It makes it so much more enjoyable. So a bunch of guys coming in, a lot of 3 stars, a couple of 4 stars. But again, you know how much college football is, a lot of it is about perception. And there was a perception that this is a good weekend for UW and maybe Kalen DeBoer's best weekend so far since he's had the job.
Yeah, well, I think he's been putting in the work. I would say of all the people in all the departments, academic services, the trainers, you name it, I mean, custodians, whatever. To my knowledge, there's only one person that is still working at the athletic department from when I was playing in the mid-80s.
Ooh, God, that's a good question. Who would that
and
be?
To my knowledge, one guy. And
Who is it? Is
Bart,
it Bart? Bart Fulmer?
And was talking with Bart, and he said...
He's an equipment guy, by the way, for those that don't know. Yeah, right.
And he said, well, for what it's worth, he just kind of said this in passing. He wasn't trying to make a big... statement about it, and I hope I'm not violating any confidence. I can't imagine I would, so I'll go ahead with it. But he said, hey, this DeBoer, I said, so what's your impression of DeBoer? And he said, he's the hardest working coach I've seen in recruiting. I said, what?
Wow.
Say it again. And he said, yep. And I said, wow, that's saying something.
That is
saying something. And so some of the fruits are being born there and realized this weekend. Now, I will say that the game has changed, right? And NIL, if you would have told me 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago that, okay, come 2022, this is going to be the landscape of college football. This is how prominent this new thing called NIL will be. And then you kind of just gave me the Cliff Notes version of what the NIL is.
Right.
I'd say, okay, there's going to be some players and there's going to be some not players. And Washington's going to be a player in that world. Just given all the wealth that is amassed in this region. For example, I know my pastor said, I'll take it as truth. From 1995 to 2000, more wealth was generated in King County than any county or like-kind province in the history of mankind. Like, there's freaking dough here, right?
Yep.
And I would have thought that everybody would be decrying the Huskies and lamenting all up and down the coast and even maybe nationally. It was like, wow, Seattle's got all this wealth and these Huskies are raking in all these NIL. It's not fair, blah, blah, blah. I would have thought the Huskies would be that. And that has not materialized yet.
No. Well, and maybe it's for the better because it's materializing for some teams around college football. And they might pay the price for it, right? I mean, if the NCAA can ever figure out how to do this, meaning enforce the rules that were set forth in the NIL, agreements that are actually defined by the NCAA, some of these teams may be going down.
Yeah.
I mean, Miami may go down. Oregon may go down. Who knows? I mean, I frankly don't think any of that's going to happen. I think this stuff will cool off a little bit. You know, I've said to Dick before that I want there to be a perception that Washington and Montlake Futures will go out of their way to make people rich. You know, like Jaden Rashada, for example, the quarterback from Pittsburgh, California, is rumored to have gotten $9.5 million from John Ruiz, who was a big donor for Miami. Josh Connerly Jr. was rumored to get, you know, $1.5 million from Division Street, which is the NIL arm of Oregon. So who knows what this is, how much of it's true, how much it's not. But let me ask you this. For Mario Cristobal, don't you want kids thinking that Jaden Rashada got $9.5 million?
Sure. Sure. Well, I mean, look at you'd want to have people – look under the hood and say, hey, do these guys, what do these guys have? I mean, it's such an interesting inflection point we have in the history of college football now, in that what you talked about, the NCAA, they don't have any teeth anymore.
Right.
Go back to the Supreme Court ruling from last summer, 9-0 against the NCAA. Now, that just involved a relatively minor aspect of their proceedings, the education-related benefits. But in the ruling, They said, look, if there has to be an analysis under antitrust law of this system, it's illegal. That point was made crystal clear. And so the NCAA and DC to lobby, their plan is lobby Congress and try and get some type of antitrust exemption. So to sit here and say that the NCAA is going to be a primary factor in this thing, for right now, you just have it's a real simple model. The labor is the players, and the players are in the eyes of the antitrust laws and how the Supreme Court looks at it, they are having their wages horizontally suppressed, and it's categorically illegal. And so.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Let me follow up with one thing before we get to a break and take some texts. We'll do a special Ask You edition of Textimonials. If you're cool with the players getting that kind of access to those kinds of salaries, if you will, and agreements, which I'm not saying you're wrong, would you also be cool with the schools saying, okay, then you're basically employees and you got to pay your own way in school. We're taking your scholarships away.
I mean, that could be fair. I mean, right now you just look and you say, there's what's called the rule of reason. I don't know how deep you want to get into this. The plaintiffs.
Well, we have 2 minutes before we have to get to a break. So you tell me.
Okay, I think I can wrap it up.
Can you do it all in 120 seconds?
I think so. So in the rule of reason application, you got three. There's three parts to it. Number one, the plaintiff says here is the violation of antitrust. Well, everybody agrees, including the NCAA and all of the schools and all the conferences, that they are price fixing. Okay, then. The burden then comes on the defendant, and they say, look, here is the pro-competitive reasons why we do this. And what the NCAA then would reply in rule two of the rule of reason is saying we have to preserve the amateurism. Basically, they would say, you don't want to go to Husky Stadium if you know those players are getting paid. Now, they're already getting paid about $16,000 a year, but if they were getting paid $60,000 a year, you want nothing to do with Husky football, even if you knew that they were full-time students. That's what the NCAA has said. Well, then the burden in rule number three of the rule of reasons come back to the plaintiffs and say, is there a materially different and less restrictive system that could be in play and the business still comply with the concerns voiced in the rule number two? So what you're going to see there is that the players, the idea that they should be making millions, what have you. No, it's just the idea that $16,000, you can't pay your bills. I got two kids on full ride scholarships, quote unquote.
Right.
I am promising you there's no such thing as a full ride scholarship. They don't get enough money to pay their bills. And the amount of hours that they have to throughout the year, they can't get a job. They can't pay their bills. All the NCAA had to do is say, instead of $16,000, what about $25,000?
Sure. Yeah.
What about maybe cap it at $30,000? If they had just been a little less greedy about all this, they might not be facing the type of antitrust scrutiny that they will be facing. It's really
Hugh, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're going to just get to a break. I totally agree because they weren't willing to dance at all. And if they would have danced a little bit, they could have avoided this whole situation. It's just like the freaking city of Seattle. If they would have just stepped up when Howard Schultz was asking for $25 million or whatever it was to fix Key Arena, they could have fixed the whole damn thing. And they blew it all. All right, we'll get a break. Special edition of Ask Hugh for testimonials. 494-51. Get him in right now on the Tullamore Dew text line. When his game time is tele time, texts are coming next on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM.
Coming to you live from the Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio KJR. This is Textimonials.
LOL, semicolon, parentheses.
Take it away, Dave Softy Mahler
and Dick Fain.
All righty, boys and girls, live from the Emerald Queen Casino, we have Bellator MMA, Pitbull versus Outlaw. I know you're a big Outlaw guy there, Dewey. Dick Fain, by the way, is out. Hugh Millen's in for Dick Fain, Bellator MMA. First time ever in the state of Washington here at the Emerald Queen Casino, Friday, July 22nd in the event center. Main event begins at 7 o'clock. So you want to buy tickets, a couple ways you can do it. You can buy them at Ticketmaster, or you can come here to the box office at the Emerald Queen Casino and save on the Ticketmaster price and even get 20% off. So Bellator MMA, Outlaw versus Pitbull, July 22nd right here at the Emerald Queen. All right, Textimonials brought to you by our friends at Tullamore Dew. When it's game time, is teletime. A special Ask Hugh edition of Textimonials of 49451. Jackson, what do you got?
Hugh, can you explain to me how you make it through each segment without choke slamming Softy? I couldn't do it.
Well, I can tell you this, that we almost made it through a playoff game without Millen smacking me in the press box before the Dolphin game at the Kingdom. Remember that?
I was rising out of my seat, and I was thinking, I'm going to slug this guy as hard as I can, but I have to do it in his chest because if I break his jaw, that's going to be all kinds of legal trouble for
me.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I was already thinking about where
so
I was going to hit.
In the amount of time after the back of my – or the front of my hand – hit the back of your head, and the amount of time that you took to get up out of your chair,
yes,
you had already processed in your brain that you were going to slug me in the chest.
As hard as I could.
Wow.
But remember now, we had driven in a convertible from Seattle to Olympia to watch Husky practice.
That's summer.
When they were... Right. And all the way down, you're like goosing me on I-5. You're goosing my leg. You're goosing my ribs. I'm a ticklish guy. You're goosing me. And then you're goosing me on the way back from Olympia. And I'm trying to drive a vehicle, not turn over.
Yeah.
And
you're driving your wife's Volvo is what it was. Yeah, convertible white Volvo is what you were driving.
You're right. That's exactly like what we were.
Barbie's
car. Enjoying
the
sunny day. We're in a chick car, no less. And so now I'm sitting here doing notes before this playoff game, and I get this. You slapped me on the back of my neck.
That was a hearty slap,
and yeah. I was like, I've had enough.
But you're leaving out one key element of the story, that you got in my face, and I said to you, dude, I know you're mad, but if you punch me right now, we're not ever getting.
Yeah, you're pleading. You did the only thing you could do to save yourself because you were like, don't do it. We'll lose our media credential forever.
All right, Jackson, what's next?
Hugh, did Don James ever come down from his tower to specifically get in your face?
Oh, there you go.
No.
Never happened?
No, but he did maybe once or twice from the tower. I know this. I got called into his office once. Here's the quick version of it. At the crew house in the summertime, I allowed myself to get a few parking tickets, and I hadn't really taken care of business, and I was kind of probably acting like a big shot, like, well, what are they going to do? Tow me? Well, that's exactly what they did, right? So I thought, well, they got my car, but they didn't get my keys. So I grabbed a couple of teammates. We went out, and I just, you know, we had somebody distract the guy behind the desk, and then I took my car out. Seems like a reasonable response. So, like... 3 days later, Gary Pinkel gives me this look. He was the quarterback coach. He says, Coach James wants to see you. And so I walk in and I sit down and he's not pleased. And he looks at me and he says, did you or did you not steal your car from Jim's Northgate Towing. And what immediately went through my mind is, this is not a good time to lie.
Right.
And so I looked at him and I said, yes. And then he rolled his eyes. You're a captain, blah, blah, blah. Now I get the lecture. And he says, this is what you're going to do. You're going to go back and you're going to pay Jim, you know, $127.33, which was a lot of money back then, whatever it was. And I'm never going to hear about this again. Right. I said, yes, sir. Walked out of the office.
That's the only way to fly, man. Only way to handle it.
Yeah.
All right. Love it. What's next, Jackson?
From now on, when Hugh is schooling all of us, it should be called Hugh Milanese.
Oh, yeah. Hugh Milanese. Mm. Well, I mean, I told you this off the air, and I'll tell this is so perfect, because I literally just told you the difference between you doing a radio show, anybody else doing a radio show, is I'm just background noise, man. They could just have it on. They could have me, Chuck, Buck, Puck, Moore, whatever. You need to stop what you're doing and literally focus on the radio to understand what the hell is coming out of your mouth. And that's a compliment, by the way. I mean that.
Well,
as a compliment.
Thank you. I do understand there's a peril to that, and I certainly, hopefully, I'm the first to recognize that. Hearing how a condensed version of how the antitrust laws impact the NIL landscape, that's not for everybody. And there's certainly far more people that would be eloquent in making that that quick description. But I do think for some that it is fascinating because we want to see what's going on here. We got Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban firing off at each other. All this NIL catastrophe. Yeah. The Supreme Court is ruling 9-0 against the NCAA. Like, what does this mean? Where are we going? You know, and so I think it's not for everybody, but it is for some.
Jim's Northgate Towing, man. All right, Jackson.
That's exactly
what's next?
What he said.
What does Hugh have to say to all those that say trade DK Metcalf now while his value is highest?
I'd say duck, because he's going to get you with the right cross. That's what I would say.
I would say that you're constantly trying to acquire young players that are great. Not good, but great, and have the potential to tilt the field. Those guys don't come across often. So in my mind, if you are a team ready-made for the Super Bowl, you sign DK, you want him now. If you're building for the future, you sign DK. You just – because – otherwise, how long have we been doing the draft? 24 years?
Yeah.
You're praying that you get a guy like that in the top five picks.
Right.
A guy that could be that impactful. And here you get a guy at the end of the second round. He's only 24. I'm as staunchly against it as I could possibly be.
Hugh Millen in for Dick Fain. He's staunchly against it as he could possibly be, and he's hanging out with us tonight. John Wilner is going to join us next segment. Brian Schmetzer at 5:45 tonight, coming up on 93.3 KJR FM.